Okay, and today we want to think of the peace offering together. Maybe in the odd occasion when you fall out with your wife or your friends, you may desire to sort this issue. So the usual way is to go and buy a bunch of flowers or a box of chocolates and take it along, and you seek to mend this broken relationship. And this gift, it's showing your intention to have the issues resolved. You remember Jacob did this, didn't he? Quite an offering he had for Esau, the 550 animals that he sent to his brother to seek to restore relations between them. And we call the chocolates, the flowers, these animals that Jacob used a peace offering. And by this we mean that we desire those fractured relationships to be healed. But that is not how we're to understand the peace offering in the Bible. The peace offering in the Bible is not an attempt to secure peace with God or with others. The peace offering is an expression of gratitude that there is peace between God and others. The peace offering is a celebration. It's the only part, the only sacrifice in which the offerer had a part. It was a meal of thanksgiving and praise and worship to God that this offerer had peace. Peace with God and peace with man. The last two verses of chapter 7 have fascinated Bible scholars. And they fascinate Bible scholars because they see that these last two verses reflect the colophone on Mesopotamian tablets. The colophone was a literary device which would come at the very end of the Mesopotamian tablets as a kind of summary of what had gone before. It's like our title page in our books. We have it at the beginning. They had it at the end. And these last two verses contain for us the different offerings which God appointed for his people. The burnt offering, the grain offering, the sin offering, the guilt offering, and lastly, the peace offering. Now, peace is a big word in the Bible, isn't it? All of you probably know the Hebrew word which lies behind it, shalom. This word used for the peace offering isn't shalom, but it's connected to shalom. And so, peace here has this idea of well-being, of health. In the offerer's world, he was at peace with God and at peace with his fellow man. Now, John Calvin does warn us that we need to be careful about getting into the details of this peace offering. And his reason is because we live too far away from when it was first given, and we cannot discern all the significance of every detail. But with that warning in mind, we will think simply of three aspects of the peace offering that will help us today, I hope, to be thankful people to God. Think first of all of the reason for the peace offering. The reason for the peace offering. And what's interesting here is that it's set out for us. And it sets out three different reasons for this Old Testament sacrifice. The first one here in verse number 12. Thanksgiving. If he offers it for thanksgiving. So someone has experienced some blessing in his or her life, and they come before God with this offering. Perhaps a child has been born. Perhaps a daughter has got married. Perhaps a mother recovers from illness. Perhaps a son has graduated as a skilled craftsman. father and mother come down to the tabernacle, the temple, and they offer a peace offering of thankfulness to God. That's one reason. Second reason in verse 16 is offering a vow. And this can refer to the past or to the present. And so you remember Jonah when he was in the belly of the fish and he says to God, I'm going to offer the sacrifice when I get out of here. If you save my life, he says, I will offer a sacrifice to you. And so the peace offering is sometimes the fulfillment of a vow in the past. Or it can be a vow made when the sacrifice is being offered. And so you might stand there at the temple and offer your peace offering and vow to God, I'm not going to steal my neighbour's hens anymore. So that was another use of a peace offering. And then a third use in verse 16 was the free will offering. If his offering is a vow offering or a free will offering. This is interesting, isn't it? Us Calvinists, the free will offering. No blessing had come. No disaster had happened that would spur the offerer into making a vow to God, a bargain with God. If you get me out of this, like Jonah, I'll offer a sacrifice. It's just a husband and wife sitting in their house one day, surveying the countless blessings that God had given to them. They said, let's go down to the tabernacle and offer a peace offering. Free will offering. No sudden crisis. No outstanding blessing. Just spontaneously, spur of the moment, an urge comes on them. They head down and give thanks to God. When David brought up the ark into Jerusalem in 2 Samuel 6, perhaps you remember, he offered a peace offering out of thankfulness to God that he was dwelling in a special way in his city. R.C. Sproul, in his great book by Stephen Nichols, he talks about the last conversation he had with his father. It was a bad conversation. And he made that promise, that vow, that he would never get into that situation again. And sometimes the peace offering was associated with a promise, with a vow. But then there was this third reason, this free will situation, where spontaneously they offered thanks to God. And I think this challenges us, doesn't it? Because we are creatures of habit. We come to church on the Sabbath day, and that is great. I hope to see you tonight. We have our times for devotions, perhaps in the morning or in the evening or midday. We have our set time throughout the week, each day, to worship God. But what about this? What about this spur of the moment? Worship. Praise. This urge, this sense that just comes on you. No special blessing. No special crisis. Just because God is great and you love him. Thomas Goodwin spoke about this, didn't he? In his discourse about prayer, he imagines God speaking and God saying to us, you pray to me when you need things, and that's fine. But when will you speak to me? Just like a friend. Martin Lloyd-Jones talks about this. If you've read his book on preachers and preaching, And Lloyd-Jones was strong on the spirit in the life of the Christian and in the preacher. But he talks about these urges that come on the minister, and I'm sure George has probably experienced it in his study. And it comes on them just as they're interacting with the text and trying to prepare the sermon. This urge to pray, and perhaps you've experienced it, driving along the car and somebody powerfully comes into your mind, or some situation is presented to you. And Lloyd-Jones argued that every time that happens, we should respond to it. We should pray. So here are the reasons, and these incredible. Sometimes it's thanksgiving for something incredible that's happened. Sometimes it's a vow, some issue that you're dealing with. But other times, it's a free will offering to God. The reasons for the peace offering. But let's think secondly of the ritual of the peace offerings. The ritual of the peace offerings. And there's two points that's emphasised in the details here, which are quite intense. One is what we are to offer, or what we are to eat. And there's details, and we'll come back to one of the points, the blood and the fat. But just for a moment, let's think about when they were to eat. This was the only sacrifice that the people partook of. But when were they to eat this? And details are set down here, which are pretty precise and clear. And it divides the three types of peace offerings into two, doesn't it? First of all, the thanksgiving peace offering. Now, it was to be eaten on the first day. You couldn't keep it to the second day or the third day. You had to eat the thanksgiving peace offering on the first day. Now, that would encourage sharing with the poor. If you got half a cow or five loaves of bread back from your peace offering, it would be far too much for yourself and your family to deal with. And this would promote care for the poor within your community, that food had to be eaten on that day. But it was also intended to promote trust in God. You've had a son born, and you offer your thanksgiving peace offering, and you eat of that peace offering on the first day. The intention is that you move on to expect the next blessing and the next grace from our giving God. It's mirroring the rules for the manna. You collect enough manna for one day, and then you trust God for the next day. It's echoed in the Lord's Prayer, isn't it? Give us this day our daily bread. It's emphasising trust, that God will keep on giving, that such is the grace of his heart, that he won't forsake his people. And then the other two, the vow and the free will offering, they were to be eaten on the first and on the second day, but not on the third day. And this was to allow fellowship with the offerer's friends and family, to give them time to journey to where he was offering his sacrifice, and to enjoy and rejoice with him in God's mercies and grace towards them. And so these timings of the consumption of the peace offerings were geared to promote trust and fellowship between the offerer and God and others. One of the highlights in church history, you remember, was in around 1000 BC when Solomon completed the temple. And you remember the peace offerings that he offered. 22,000 oxen, 120,000 sheep, peace offerings, thankfulness to God and fellowship among God's people, gratitude for the peace that they enjoyed with God, but also with one another. Now, Andrew Bonar, that Scotsman from Calais, has a great commentary on Leviticus, as you know, and he zooms in on the 17th verse, and he says, we find Jesus here. The four words, on the third day. They weren't allowed to eat the peace offerings on the third day, because verse 18 says they would be tainted or corrupted. The bread would go hard in the heat. It might go mouldy. They weren't allowed it on the third day because corruption would set in there. And Andrew Bonar argues that within Judaism, this third day was connected with corruption, both in the area of food, as in here, and in the area of death. The third day was when corruption set in. And so he reasons. Christ was raised on the third day. Psalm 16, you will not allow your Holy One to see corruption. You will show him the paths of life, and your presence is fullness of joy. The ritual of the peace offering. And then thirdly, the relevance of the peace offering. How does this offering transfer into the New Testament? Do the New Testament writers draw at all on this peace offering in Leviticus chapter 7? I think there's two strands of connection between the Old Testament and the New Testament in relation to this peace offering. One of the crossovers between the old and the new is this idea of thankfulness. It's emphasized here in Leviticus, but it's also emphasized in the New Testament. The peace offering usually came after the sin offering or the burnt offering. And it's making a point, isn't it? That God is not only concerned with atonement, the putting away of sin. He wants more from us. He wants a life that's lived out in gratitude to reconciliation with God. And the peace offering is emphasizing that point. The burnt offering, the sin offering, the guilt offering all deal with atonement. But that's not all the offerings. The peace offering is exhorting us to be thankful. And so we read in Philippians 4, don't we? Do not be anxious about anything. But in everything, with prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, that your requests be made known to God. Colossians 4, verse 2, continue steadfastly in prayer, being watchful in it with thanksgiving. Ephesians 5:20, giving thanks always for everything to God the Father in the name of the Lord Jesus. And as we think of the peace offering, yes, we think of the sacrifices, and usually we think of atonement and the sin offering and the burnt offering and the guilt offering, but there's more to the sacrifices. There's this strand of thankfulness that's to characterize the worshipper of God. But the second connection between the Old and New Testament is communion. This was the only sacrifice that the offerer partook of. And we can see the connection because in the details we read in verses 11 to 18, bread is dominant. And that bread of the sacrifice is then partaken of by the offerer. We're familiar with the common description of communion in the New Testament, the breaking of bread. You see the scrutiny that the offerer was to undergo in verses 19 to 21 to examine himself, to purify himself. It's echoed in 1 Corinthians 11 as we come to communion and reflect on our lives and experience cleansing from God. Thomas Chalmers' most famous sermon, the Scottish preacher of the 19th century in Glasgow, he preached on one occasion which has become his best known sermon, The Expulsive Power of a New Affection. And his sermon was based on the verse in 1 John, if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And Chalmers' argument was that when the powerful love of God comes upon us, that will be the only resolution to our natural inclination to loving the world. The expulsive power of a new affection. God's love in our hearts will be stronger than our love for the world. And the peace offering is making this point, isn't it? That as we appreciate the atonement of Christ in the burnt and the sin and the guilt offerings, we will respond with worship and praise and thanksgiving. So communion is the occasional reenactment of the peace offering for us. But thanksgiving in our prayers should be the regular reenactment of the peace offering in our lives. Perhaps this afternoon you can look through some of the big events in the Old Testament, and you will see that those big events are marked by peace offerings being brought to God. When the people entered into the land of Canaan in Joshua 8, they offered peace offerings. When Saul was appointed king in 1 Samuel 11, they offered peace offerings. When the angel of death stopped outside Jerusalem in 2 Samuel 24, they offered peace offerings. When Hezekiah rebuilt the temple and reorganized worship in 2 Chronicles 30, they offered peace offerings. A big event in Israel's history. People used the peace offering to bring gratitude and thanks to God. And when we celebrate graduation from university, passing your driving test, a big birthday, let's include the God element. The peace offering emphasizes this. It's not just celebration among family and friends, but it's celebration with family and friends in the presence of God who has brought us this blessing. So the reasons for the peace offering. They remind us that prayer is more than petition, don't they? There is thanksgiving. There is vows that can be offered in our prayers. And there is this spontaneous dimension to prayer. One of the incredible phrases in the book of Leviticus chapters 1 to 7 is that the fire should always be burning on the brazen altar. And this is emphasizing that the worship of God can always take place. The worship of God should always take place. If you want a book to read over the summertime, the one by R.C. Sproul, by Stephen Nichols, I would recommend. It's a biography of R.C. Sproul. He died a few years ago. But in that biography, he talks about a life-changing moment in his experience. He was a student on campus He couldn't sleep at night, and at midnight he got out from his bed and he sought out the chapel on the college campus. And he went into the chapel and kneeled down and worshipped God. The reasons for the peace offering, the ritual of the peace offering. We thought about the time when it should be eaten. The verses also emphasise what should or shouldn't be eaten. And one thing that shouldn't be eaten by the offerer is the fat. Maybe you say, well, I agree with that. When I get my roast out of the oven this afternoon, I'll be cutting off the fat. But there's a spiritual intention there, isn't there? The fat was all to be burned. The fat was all to be given to God. The energy, the calories, the drive of the beast was for God. And it was speaking to the offerer that their life should be dedicated to God. Their energies, their efforts, their time. I was at a Bible class recently and we were talking about health. And we got round to talking about the wrong focus that we can have. We can focus on living long, but not on living well. Our focus should be on living well. Not necessary. Living long. When Chalmers died, Thomas Chalmers died at the age of 67, that the Spectator, the big magazine, said of Chalmers, he lived all his days. What a thing to be said of us, the fat given to God, that all our days we really live for the best things. We don't drift. We really live for God. And the relevance of the peace offering. What if the peace offering wasn't in the Bible? What if? Kevin DeYoung, in his great book, Men and Women in the Church, he talks about this book which has this very title, What If? A really interesting book about events in history, and historians speculate about what if things had turned out differently. For example, what if the Spanish Armada had won? What if Alexander the Great had lived to be an old man? How would things have been differently? And one of the stories in this book on what if is about Annie Oakley. Now, Annie Oakley was an actor, a participant in, let me get the great title for you, Buffalo Bill's Wild West show. So Annie Oakley's party piece in this show was to shoot the ash off a cigar. Now, before she did this stunt, she would say to the audience, "Now I'm going to shoot the ash off a cigar. Does anyone want to volunteer?" And of course, no one ever volunteered, except in 1889 at the Berlin race course. When she made this great offer to the crowd, the Kaiser, Wilhelm, stepped forward. And his policemen were trying to dissuade him from this madness. But he insisted. And he took the cigar and he held it. And historians record this momentous occasion when Annie pulled out her Colt 45, regretting that she'd consumed too much whiskey the night before. And she shot the ash off the Kaiser's cigar. And of course they ask, what if? What if she'd missed and hit the Kaiser? Would there have been no World War I? What if? And what if the peace offering was not in the Bible? What if there'd be less encouragement for thanksgiving? There'd be less encouragement for us to make vows to God. There'd be less encouragement for spontaneous worship of God. And there would be one less picture of Jesus Christ, who is our peace.